and sold to Facebook. Sorry.
Shh, Jay, you weren't supposed to say.
Oh, darn it. Really bad at this.
Yeah. Zuckerberg called me personally.
He's Alan Bubby.
Yeah. He wants your deets, man. He goes, give me the 411 on Jay. I need to know.
I don't think his programming is that complex.
Yeah, it's probably not. Okay, so in addition to the normal squirrels, we have a guest. I guess I'm going to call it a guest listener because that's really what he is. It's Rob. I don't know if we want to go into more detail than that, but it's Rob, the guest listener.
Hello.
Do you want to say anything? Do you want to say like where you live or anything like that? Or do you want to?
Well, my name's Rob, as you heard. I live in Idaho Falls, Idaho.
All right.
About 2 hours away from Grand Teton National Park and Yellowstone.
Beautiful country.
Have you been to Yellowstone?
Many, many times. Twice this year alone already.
Nice.
And part of that's also because I'm a nature photographer. I mostly specialize in wildlife, astrophotography, and storm chasing.
I'm jealous now.
Yeah. I can hear it, and Alan's like, "Oh, my dream job!"
And on both trips this year, I've been able to find bears to shoot photos of.
Nice.
I think we need to do a field trip to Rocks.
I agree. Let's let's go. Let's do a location. What do they call that? A location? Something.
Something. Yeah.
We'll go on location. There we go.
Podcast on location.
I have a question for Rob. And I know that aside from us badgering our listeners, what was your reason for wanting to be on the Score Report?
Just kind of a why the hell not thing. And because you guys have been badgering.
We do badger a little bit.
Because, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, really.
Well.
You're lucky to get out of this alive, you fool. No, wait.
And I'm involved in other podcasts already, so.
Cool. Okay.
It's not something that's totally new to me.
Good.
Great.
Yeah, I was just talking with my husband before the show, and I was telling him about, like, what we had, like, a listener set up to join in the show and be kind of like a guest co-host, and he's like, oh. I said, well, don't worry. You know, we can always hang up on him if things go terrible. We can always hang up. And he's like, have you ever hung up on anybody before? I was like, oh, yeah, we used to have to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Back in my previous podcasting life, yeah.
Podcast that shall not be named.
Correct. Yeah, it was like standard operating procedure, like have your finger hovering over the button every time you picked up a call.
I have gone back and listened to a few of those.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
That's ancient history.
Are you talking about Vicious Circle or
yeah.
or the other one? Oh, no. There was an other one.
Oh.
That is the one that shall not be named.
Oh, okay.
You know what's funny? I was talking to Dennis, the holster guy, you know, Dragon Leatherworks, mm-hmm. Dennis, and he was telling me that he had somebody order a holster with the Vicious Circle logo on it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just recently.
Were they from China?
No, they were from here in the U.S. somewhere.
And, wow.
And, you know, I mentioned that, you know, we still get like, you know, 400 or 500 downloads a month from that show.
What?
I know. It's crazy.
Oh, God.
I don't know what people are doing.
That's kind of surprising.
It's.
Why?
I'm not getting my royalty check, Alan.
I know,
right?
Nobody is. Okay. But no, people are still listening to it. I, you know, it's weird to me, but okay. If you enjoy it.
If it makes you happy.
Yeah.
We're happy you're happy. Wow.
I wonder how much of it is like. You know, like there's this like nerdy impulse to collect everything.
Yes.
I just wonder how much of it is that. Just, you know.
And I'm kind of like that in a way with certain podcasts. I'll try to go back and listen to all of them. I haven't been able to do that with the Squirrel Report, and definitely not Vicious Circle, but you guys mentioned it a whole bunch, so I had to go and check it out for at least a couple of episodes.
I'm sorry.
It was a weird time, and we apologize. Yeah.
You know, it's like when you're at college and everyone's experimenting and stuff, and then you never want to talk about it again. And
yeah.
It was like that. It was experimental podcasting.
It was a learning curve.
Yeah. Oh, boy, was it ever.
Very sharp learning curve.
And the production quality's gotten much better since then, as far as audio quality.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 100% to do with me just going into the microphone.
Yeah.
I remember Jay.
Like, there is.
Jay used to get... You used to get angry and start ranting, and your headset would start chopping up.
They couldn't handle it apparently.
It was hilarious.
Couldn't handle the yelling.
Yeah.
Couldn't handle it, the unadulterated rage.
Yeah. That was great. The good old days.
The good old days.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was going to ask Rob, how did you find us?
I know it was through Weird. He mentioned it on one of the other shows he's on. He was on at some point in time, so okay. I decided to check it out.
Great. Well, we're glad you did.
Been hooked ever since.
Yeah, so we appeal to a very refined audience.
Yeah. I told some friends I was coming on a different podcast other than what I'm normally doing, and told them about the show, and most of them basically kind of went, yeah, don't sound not too interested.
<You're> boring.
I think we're interesting.
Yes,
we're very interesting. And my mom.
Y'all are interesting.
Your mom
listens?
Oh, no.
Oh, my mom does not listen. I said my mom.
Oh, God. I was panicked there.
No. I don't think my mom knows what podcasts are.
Okay, that's fine. She's probably like, better for everybody.
Yeah, she's on the Facebooks, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I just barely taught my mom how to text about 2 years ago.
Yeah, she can't do group texts. She ends up replying to the wrong person.
Oh, no. That can be dangerous.
It's my mom. I mean, she's just like, you know, she'll text. There'll be a group text. And like, my sister will send a picture of her and her daughter. And, you know, her daughter's 2.5. She's ridiculously cute. And she'll send it to me and my mom and my dad. And my mom will reply to me. So when are you bringing her over? And I'm like, Mom, I think you meant to send that to my sister. Yeah. You have to explain technology to them.
Meanwhile, I very rarely have conversations with my mother anymore that aren't on text messages. My mother is super techie, and she always has been. She's always been into like computers and mechanic stuff, and now she has like the big, you know, Mac computer and iPads and her iPhone and, you know.
So she's been prepped by Alan.
Pretty much. And then, she will, like, you know, on the sly, like, contact Alan for tech support and not tell me about it. And Alan will be like, your mom just sent me a message and, you know, something with her computer. I'm like, okay. now my mom has a trip coming up in October, she's going to Italy. So now we're trying to like make sure that, you know, her iMessage is working and so that she can text me from Italy and send me pictures.
Wow.
That'll be fun. Yeah, she's into it, man. Not bad for 75.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how everybody, enough about my mother. Nobody wants to hear about my mother. Except she would be a fun guest.
Yes, she would.
Would. You know what? When she gets back from Italy, that would be really cool.
Yeah, she would love to.
From some of the stories you've told, Rita, that would be kind of a entertaining guess.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd have to, like, have, like, I'd probably have to write up a contract about what stuff she's allowed to talk about, what she's not allowed to talk about.
Brita stories.
No, yeah. No Brita stories. Yes. Nobody wants those. yeah, but she would be a fun guest, probably. And Hooker was, I don't know if she does Skype. She probably does. I mean, she has the app and stuff, but I don't know if she does Skype anyone in particular. But yeah. Well, so anyway, it's been a week, guys.
Yes, it has. It's been a week that I was very upset to find myself trying to, you know, being forced to support Alex Jones.
Yeah, that was kind of tough for me too.
You know, it's.
It's like the perfect storm of WTF, because on the one hand, it's a private entity. They should be able to do whatever they want.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they're kind of like Ma Bell. They were the only public entity. So there is kind of a prevailing interest in not just randomly cutting off people's livelihoods.
Well, there's also the hypocrisy involved.
Oh,
exactly.
If there weren't double standards, the left wouldn't have standards at all.
Because, I mean, Louis Farrakhan has said far worse stuff on his Twitter and Facebook, and they haven't touched him.
Yep.
Well, that would be racist if they did, right?
Of course. You know, there's two things going, you know, taking what Jay said a little further, you know, Facebook has, you know, monopoly power on social media. I mean, that's undeniable. They are a monopoly in social media. But beyond that, one of the reasons they got to where they are is because they fall under the what the FCC calls basically the common carrier thing, right? So, and the reason that Facebook isn't sued to death by everybody that finds offense at something that's posted is because they hide under that safe harbor of being a common carrier. Basically, you know, the idea being that they're not responsible for what people post on Facebook, except now they're editing what people post on Facebook, which violates their common carrier status and may leave them liable for suits about content.
Interesting.
So that's a big deal. They may regret this more than their stock price would already indicate.
Yeah. I do wonder how it works as far as common carrier. You don't pay for their product.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, at least when it was the phone company and evil Ma Bell, who, you know, isn't that quaint? Like, oh, that's so cute that people only had one option for phones. And the phones were actually tethered to the wall.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you tell that to a millennial and they won't have any clue what you're talking about. I hope you're not a millennial, Rob.
Hey, I am a millennial, and I know how to use a rotary telephone.
Okay.
Well, yeah, they just got touch tone in Idaho. Come on.
I think one of our unincorporated communities was the last community in the lower 48 to receive phone service.
Wow. So, not to go off topic, but what do they do?
I'm not sure what they did before they didn't have phones up there.
I mean, were they like Amish? They're not. You don't have Amish, do you?
Nope. It's just up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, you know, the crazy mountain guy. Basically, hillbilly.
Yeah, it was 1982 when they received phone service.
Wow. I feel like I've seen this movie.
There were banjos. No, sorry.
What the heck? Okay, go on.
And the population of that community as of 2006 was 2.
Oh, okay. So they just lived next door. They didn't have to make phone calls. They could just walk in the store. Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, but still, that's crazy to think about that it was the 80s before they got phone service. I mean, that's like you know, it makes me want to ask, when did they get electricity?
Couldn't tell. Yeah.
You know,
I don't know, but we did have the first city in the U.S. to be powered by nuclear energy.
Hmm.
Ooh, nice.
Nuclear.
I'm like the something you said earlier, Rob, kind of intrigued me. Astrophotography. So is that like is it what it sounds like? You take pictures of constellations and stuff because you have so little light pollution?
Mostly the core of the Milky Way. Nice. I don't know if you've ever seen images of it, but you get with a long exposure and wide open aperture and high enough ISOs, you can bring out a whole lot of detail in the like dust lanes and stuff in the Milky Way galaxy. And then I also have a tracker which I can mount my camera to, and it follows the stars across the sky, and I can stick a longer lens on and do some deep sky stuff with nebulas and stuff.
Oh, cool.
Really cool.
Do you have a website that we can look at this, or?
I don't have a website. Most of it's on Instagram, which is publicly viewable.
Okay. Would you like to share that? Because I would like to look at it.
I actually have his Instagram.
And yeah, you didn't share it with me?
Okay. It's Instagram.com/ Rob Ryan Photography.
All right. Awesome. I did
share it.
I'll go there right now.
The Facebook group.
And most of the stuff I've posted recently has been wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to scroll down a little ways before you start seeing much astro stuff because it's been really smoky here, so the skies have been not wanting.
Yeah, but you got some fire stuff going on near there.
Yeah, we had a big fire just to the north of town that burned around about 100,000 acres.
Wow.
They got that one under control last week or the week before. And there's another big one going on in the central part of the state that they still haven't gotten under control.
That's freaky.
Yeah, you know, we get some massive fires up here.
You know, people worry, you know, because I live right next to Houston. And, you know, people are always like, oh, hurricanes. Or a little further north, oh, tornado. You can get out of the way of both of those. And with a little forewarning, even a tornado is really not that big a deal. I mean, you can survive it. It might destroy your house, but man, on fires, that scares me. Cause you know, you can get wrapped up in one of those and you're just dead.
Yeah. We get all sorts of crazy stuff here. We have fires. This year we had a couple tornadoes. It's not uncommon for us to get a nice windstorm through that's just about hurricane force winds. Crazy place to live, but it's worth it because it's a pretty area.
Oh, yeah, the scenery is amazing. I've been up there for boomer shoot.
You also have warring buffalo, which really scares me. Buffalo fighting. Nope.
Yeah, that was in Yellowstone.
Your photographs are amazing, by the way.
Thanks.
Do they fight?
Yes, they will fight and butt heads, just like bighorn sheep will and stuff.
Oh, wow.
I would imagine the earth shakes.
Yeah, because those aren't small animals.
They're not.
No, it makes a nice thud, almost boom sort of sound.
Hmm.
I've been close to a buffalo once, and it was pretty frightening.
I ate a buffalo.
I've eaten lots of buffalo, but
in Yellowstone, you'll be driving down the road, and there'll be a buffalo walking down the side of the road so close you can just about stick your arm out of the car and give it a nice slap on the side if you're dumb enough.
Wow. Yeah,
Are buffalo like moose, where you see pictures of them and you're like, oh yeah, that's a big animal. But then when you see it in real life, it's like, holy crap, it's enormous.
Yes. And but the buffalo will gore people. Every year, probably about a dozen tourists up in Yellowstone get gored and have to get evacuated via helicopter to the hospital.
Oh, because they wouldn't have selfies with the buffalo, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Buffalo selfie. Wow. That's what we call Darwin, folks.
Yeah. Yep, and I don't know if you heard about it, but last week there's a guy that was filmed in Yellowstone taunting a big old bison, as we call him here. And turns out this dude was just on a bender through a bunch of national parks. They caught him in a Teton on a drunken disorderly, and he spent the night in jail in probably Jackson, I guess, and then got out the next day, headed up to Yellowstone. He got pulled over and was given a seatbelt ticket and was drunk, but he was the passenger at the time. So he just got the seatbelt ticket, and shortly after that is when he started harassing the bison. Mm. Well, given his previous record and the whole bison incident, they ended up issuing a warrant out for his arrest. Well, he had moved on to Glacier National Park as his itinerary that he gave law enforcement before said. So they were looking for him up in Glacier. Well, as they're looking for him in Glacier, a call comes in and a disorderly behavior and disruptive behavior in one of the lodges up in Glacier National Park. So the rangers roll in there, and what do you know? It's the guy they're looking for. That was the bison.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
People, man.
Yep.
Bad life choices.
And sometimes some of the things in Yellowstone, you can almost just conduct like social experiments. Like when I was up there a few weeks ago, Buddy and I pulled into a small trailhead parking lot to eat lunch and relax for a bit. And everyone was just parallel parked along the side of this road and parking lot. And of course, with parallel parking, you can fit less cars. Well, there's plenty of room for cars to park normally. And so my buddy and I, we just parked normally and went on about eating our lunch. Well, as the idiots started leaving, the people coming in would start to park normally. And what do you know? Three times the amount of cars could fit in the parking lot.
Why were they parallel parking?
Monkey see, monkey do, I guess.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They saw someone do it and decided to do the same.
It only takes one.
Yep.
I saw an article recently about how certain tourist destinations around the world are a lot different when you experience them, like versus the pictures that you see online or whatever. And, you know, everybody's Instagram photo of, you know, going to Yellowstone and seeing the geyser is a lot different than the experience of it, because there are so many tourists.
Absolutely. Around Old Faithful, when it's about to go off, it is surrounded about 180 degrees by people and probably 4 to 6 rows deep.
Wow. So it's not like this. I mean, I'm sure it's beautiful and impressive no matter what, but it's not what you see in the pictures.
Pretty much, yeah. And yeah, it's one of those things that once you've seen it, you've seen it. So I tend to avoid the Old Faithful area like the plague.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess like you say, it's you kind of like you go and you see it, and you go, oh, okay.
Yep.
I think there's you ever see those things where they're like, oh, this is a foreign word for a certain thing that is not translatable to English. And I think it's a German word. And of course I can't remember what it is now, but there is a certain word for the feeling of you're taking a picture of a thing, like a tourist thing, that you know that everybody else has the same exact picture of.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of gives you that feeling of like, why am I bothering to take his picture.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's kind of been a lot of the stuff I run into with my own photography, because photography's become so prevalent and it's been around for quite a while now. It's hard to find things that haven't been photographed much.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to try to get off the beaten path, and yeah, I'll get those iconic shots, but then I'll always look for other shots that most people wouldn't think to necessarily shoot.
Yeah, that's something you have to think about when you're, you know, when you're like traveling, and I'm very susceptible to this because I've done, you know, I've been doing photography for, well, like since I was in high school, which was a long time ago, but I have a tendency to get mired in the viewfinder at times, and not, you know, like experience the, you know, it's like sometimes I have to like force myself, all right, put the camera down.
Yeah.
And, you know, because another picture of that building or whatever it is that you know, 20 million people have photographed is not going to matter at all versus the experience of being there and seeing it with your own eyes and all that kind of stuff. You know, it just, it's
exactly.
It's a trap anybody can fall into, you know, especially,
yes.
Especially you see people doing it with their phones and their selfies and all that kind of stuff. Cause I have witnessed people, now Houston's not that big of a tourist destination, but I've seen people that do, you know, they pull up to some tourist thing, they hop out, they spend maybe 5 minutes there, they get the selfie and they roll off, and
right.
You're like, what? Why did you even bother, you know?
Yeah, go look at a picture on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of money just to get out and take a picture and look at it sometime later, maybe when you get home.
Yeah.
Well, you have to think also, like, you take pictures, and how many pictures do you take, and how many pictures do you actually go back and look at?
Well, that's true also.
That's a collecting thing, right? Because because I do that. I've got tons of pictures and I save them to my computer off of my phone, but when do I actually go back and look at them?
Yeah. Exactly.
I worry about that also because, you know, I lost my mom a couple of years ago, and she had boxes and boxes and boxes of photographs on, you know, like, you know, paper photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Unlabeled, unmarked. I'm like, who the hell is this? I have no idea. You know, yeah. ones that have like her in it, I can go, oh yeah, there's mom. And that was, you know, who are these people? Don't know. Wasn't marked. You know, I'm sure it meant something to her, and she could have said, oh yeah, that was so-and-so, but you know, that information's gone. And, you know, and it's even worse in the digital age now that we can take, you know, 20,000 pictures of something. And I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, at least for me, and we're getting really nerdy here, but at least for me, a lot of it is the technical, it's that thing that makes somebody go out and fish every day or go out and hunt for stuff, you know, things like that. It's the getting the shot, you know, can I get that bird and can I get him, you know, in focus and sharp image and all that kind of stuff, or can I get that squirrel, or can I, you know, can I get whatever, can I make the shot? So there's a little bit of that.
Definitely. And another part of it is I'm a nerd. I like electronics and other gadgetry.
Oh yeah. That so doesn't hurt either.
Photography is kind of just another one of those
yep.
worlds that can dive in with.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's, I don't know. I guess I tend to have expensive hobbies, and that's one of them.
Yeah. Funny thing is, I got back into photography after a very long time because I thought it'd be a cheaper hobby than firearms.
That's funny.
Oh,
and spending about $10,000 just this year makes that, yeah, not so much.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of different because there's more upfront cost, but less per use cost, I guess.
Yeah.
Thing. You can, you know, with guns, you've got, you know, there's a certain amount of upfront cost, and then there's, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100 bucks every time you go to the range.
And part of that cost for this year was because I upgraded camera bodies because I felt like I absolutely had to go full frame for some reason, even though I know I really didn't.
What'd you get?
D850.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah.
What were you using before?
D7200.
Oh, I had one of those. That's, but you do a lot of landscapey stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, that's, I mean, sorry, I apologize, Jay and Brita.
No, it's interesting. Go ahead.
I'm going to go camera nerdy here. It's, you know, for the wide angle, it's easier. I mean, you can do an 8mm lens on an APS-C, but it's so much easier to do, you know, a 14 or 15mm on a full frame.
Mm-hmm. Well, with my APS-C sensors, I have a lens that is a 11 to 20 millimeter and on a Nikon crop sensor camera that makes it effectively a 15.5mm to 30mm, which is
right,
pretty much identical to your typical ultra wide for full frame.
Right. Yeah. And it's a lot more difficult to make that lens than it is to make an ultra wide on a full frame. It's just, you know, it's the same reason, if you went to like medium format,
mm-hmm,
which is like the next big thing. Now everybody's, you know, like you got the Fuji the GFX, and you got all these medium frame that are like, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, full frame.
and part of back to the difficulty of making those ultra wides for the APS-C. I mean, since the sensor's so tiny, it makes it just that much harder to make it distortion free. Cause that,
right,
that 11 to 20, it's not a bad lens, but I wouldn't necessarily say it doesn't even compare to my 15 to 30 for my full frame.
No,
my 15
and
to 30.
I mean, there's, you know, the optical qualities that you'd have to make it out of some unknown mythical material that treated light differently than, you know, like glass and stuff in order to make it, you know, mm-hmm, less distorting. So thank goodness for Photoshop and things like that can automatically correct those distortions. So.
Yeah. Lightroom. All I have to do is click a checkbox and it's done.
Click the lens checkbox. Yeah. All right. That's enough camera nerdy. I can my spidey sense is telling me Brita's about to fall asleep. So
no, I'm good. Okay. Yeah. I just was noticing like how much similar terminology, you know, shooting and photography.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lots of numbers involved and.
One thing that still kind of trips me out and weirds me out is when a portrait photographer says, oh, they're going to go shoot some kids.
I you just might want to rethink that.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially this day and age.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're going to have to stop saying that word. That's going to freak people out. I'm going to go photograph some children.
Especially if you're a school photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go to like Lincoln Elementary and shoot some kids.
Yeah. You know what I run? You know what I run into? Is what? We do video. We do a lot of video.
Right.
And I keep, you know, oh, we're going to be filming. Oh, wait, there's no actual film.
Oh,
check my language because I work with.
What do you call it then?
Yeah, you know, we're recording.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, we've got a tape today. No, we're not. There's no tape involved. And of course, I have to explain to my assistant, who's a millennial, that, you know, we used to actually store information by encoding it on magnetic tape. And when you say that, it sounds like the most bizarre ritual that a human being could engage in. Magnetic tape. Ooh, now we have flash cards or flash drives and thumb drives and, you know, SSD hard drives the size of a quarter that can hold like zillions of terabytes. No, we had a cassette tape or a VHS tape that could hold 30 minutes of video.
Yes, actual physical tape.
Yes.
I may be a millennial and a fairly young one at that. I'm 29. But
get off my lawn.
My parents were old enough to be my grandparents, so they mm-hmm. were kind of behind the times on a lot of the technology. So I grew up with rotary phone on the wall,
wow.
VHS tapes, 8-track player.
Living the dreams.
Nice. I had a similar experience. My parents were older. My father specifically, he was, you know, older when I was born. And I grew up with big band music because that's what he listened to. And I only listened to big band music until I got into like middle school, like this newfangled rock and roll stuff. Like, you know, so yep. Big band music is still kind of like my go-to for like familiar, you know, feel good music.
So, I grew yeah. up on big band and old country, like Patsy Cline. And,
oh yeah. Nice. Yep.
Johnny Horton and stuff like that.
Cool.
How about you, Jay?
What's
How about Jay?
Well, like my dad was all we did. My folks were more into the, you know, the 50s rock, you know, the Chuck Berry and Bill Haley, and it was always on the oldies station, which led to a real shock for me many, many years later. It was actually my father-in-law picked me up at the airport, and I got into his van, and I heard Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
What? Which,
a very unusual song to hear coming out of my father-in-law's van. And then I realized it was on the oldies station.
What?
Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle. Is this
no.
2012? It was 25 years old, which makes it eligible for oldies.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
That and was got, that's like listening to 50s music in the 70s. Yeah.
Exactly. I got in the van. It was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Thanks, and, Jay.
So, yes, you're welcome.
My dad was at least open to a lot of the newer stuff because sometimes he had a CD in his pickup that was Metallica. And he would, if we were going somewhere with my mom, he would put that in just to annoy her because she's not very open to more modern music.
Uh-oh, I heard Tig.
Ronan.
Oh.
We had 8-track stuff. I remember listening to the Rolling Stones on 8-track and having to stop it like in the middle of a song and flip it over. I thought it was just the dumbest thing ever. Oh,
that was irritating as hell.
In the middle of a song.
Yeah.
It flipped in the middle.
Wow. Yeah.
That was just.
And they were enormous. They were like the size of a book.
Yeah, that was a really dumb format.
And then you had cassettes, and that was like a breakthrough. And you had a cassette deck in your car. You could actually choose the music you listened to in your car.
Revolutionary.
Like, how amazing is that? Now it's come full circle. You know, I mean, you figure like you look in like the, you know, the post-war era. It was amazing to have a radio. Like, that was, oh my gosh, this was an extravagant purchase. And you have a radio in your car. You can listen to music in your car. And then we got, you know, 8-track players and cassette players and compact disc players. And now it's an audio jack or Bluetooth. My car will pick up my phone just from. Doesn't even have to be plugged in. You just hop in and it's playing music off my phone, which, of course, most of it is music that has been downloaded by my daughter. I had it set up so that anytime she downloads something, I get a copy of it so I knew what she was downloading, which means I have like an enormous repertoire of, you know, My Chemical Romance and, 21 Pilots and
all of the alternative slash emo slash whatever bands that are out there now that, by the way, all suck. So
yes, they all suck.
Sorry.
It could be worse, though, still. It could be horrible gangster rap garbage.
As a fan of Public Enemy, I'm not certain on that, but it could also be pop, which is even horribler. I know it's more horrible, but it's more horribler. It's a double.
Horribler should be a word.
It's not even like really, I don't know. Pop music is...
The auto-tune has ruined music, period.
Yes, and it has.
Get off my damn lawn.
Well, also you find out that almost all pop music, I was reading an article the other day, I'd have to go back and hunt for it, but apparently all the pop music is written by like two guys.
All these singers now, you take the auto-tune away and they sound like garbage.
Yeah. They're awful. So you got basically all the songs are written by the same people. All the studios will only publish songs that are safe. And I mean, so you have this like conversion of music where it all sounds the same and it's all awful.
Well, I don't think it's about the music anymore.
No,
it's about the celebrity of the person on stage. Right. And, you know, they're not really selling music anymore.
No, they're not.
Kids, you were saying to me the other day that your daughter said that she never buys music. She just streams it on YouTube or whatever.
Right. And Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
I know Pandora, I don't buy music. You know. I stream it on Spotify.
Yeah. They use, they go in full circle. You know, they used to, back in the old days, they used to, back in the 50s, they used to make their money doing touring and doing shows. And the record, you know, they kind of got into this weird time in the, you know, late 60s and 70s and 80s even, where they were making so much money from record sales that the touring was to promote the record.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's flip-flopped where the record, the song, the recorded, whatever it is PR, is promotion for the show. And they make their money on... you know, merchandising and tickets. I mean, I don't know if you've gone to a concert lately, but the tickets are insanely expensive for the big acts. I mean, they're, you know, $100 for shitty seats.
Even smaller bands, it's pretty ridiculous. There's a band I like out of Texas. They got their start here. They're called Reckless Kelly. They're kind of a country rock band, and they did a show here a few months back, and tickets were like $50, which is crazy for a small band here in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's how they make their money now. Which you know, kind of takes them back to the, you know, musician, the way the musicians used to make money, which was by playing music.
Well, they
crazy talk.
Well, back before records existed, right? You, if you were a musician, you couldn't make money unless you were playing music. So
actual music.
This would be the 19th century, Alan.
Well, or, you know, the 18th century, 17th, 16th, whatever, you know, I mean, there was a time, you know how this, you know how they got this weird, I don't know if you, how much you know about the recording industry, but you know how, you know, a band will release a song and sell a record and they always list who wrote the song, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason they do that is because the songwriter gets a chunk of gets a royalty from everyone that's sold. And that goes back to the old days of sheet music, when the writer of the song got a royalty from every time some sheet music was sold, and they just carried that forward. So, and that, you know, that predated recordings, and so you could have, if you know, you wrote a catchy song and published the sheet music, you could make a lot of money off of it.
But anymore, it's almost like, what's sheet music anymore? Just about anyone that actually plays music, especially with guitar, uses tabs or chords now.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to teach myself how to play guitar lately, and I've you know, I in the entire time I've been like looking at stuff online and you know, looking at, you know, watching videos and stuff, nobody ever breaks out music like in the standard notation, you know, with like bars and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's always,
Tabs are at least easier to pick up first. You don't need to know all that much about music. It's just where to put your fingers and which strings to pluck.
Yeah. I don't know. I played trombone for years and years and years when I was in school, in junior high and high school. And I, you know, I have mild dyslexia, but I never really learned how to read music. And I took piano lessons for a few years before that when I was a little kid, and I never really learned how to read music.
I did piano and actually trombone as well, and I never learned how to read sheet music.
Yeah.
With trombone, I always winged it and looked at the guy next to me and figured, okay, I need to go out about that far for this part.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you learn the tricks. It's just like dealing with any other kind of handicap, you know. You learn to compensate and, you know, get along.
I always wondered about the bugle.
What about it?
How do you get different tones out of a bugle?
The bugle doesn't.
Yeah, the way you get different tones is the resonance frequency of the bugle itself. And as you go into the mouthpiece, you by tightening your lips or loosening them up, you generate a that is in the resonant frequency of the length of copper tubing or brass tubing that thing is. And so you can play a range of notes, and that is it. Whatever the bugle noise is.
So basically it's like a giant kazoo.
Well, a kazoo will play any sound, any frequency you can hum into it. But yes. But a bugle will only play certain resonant frequencies, and that's it. You can't play like a half step frequency on a bugle.
Right.
So. God, we're nerdy on this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got damn.
Deep into the weeds.
I am so sorry, people.
Hey, Rob, do you play Dungeons and Dragons, or have you ever?
I have not. I've kind of found it interesting, but I'm not quite that nerdy, at least not to where I'll admit it.
Since you're a millennial, was it a thing when you were a kid or no?
Not in the groups I hung around with.
I think it may be because of video games.
In school, I was more jock, redneck type person, so we were always either doing sports or mudding in our trucks or shooting stuff.
Like it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't see the downside necessarily. Back in the old days, right?
You're singing the song of my people.
And where I went to school, we were still able to keep our shotguns in our truck to go hunting after class.
Nice. Wow. Is that still the case now?
Probably not, because the area I grew up in has grown up so much and been developed so much that the high school's not even on the edge of town anymore. So,
oh, okay.
It was just a matter of going in, letting school security and the principal know, and they would basically just say, make sure it stays out of sight and in the truck, and we're all good.
Wow, that's nice.
I took a this tells you how far things have gone downhill. I took a Chinese made Mosin Nagant to school for show and tell one year.
Yeah, but Alan, they were brand new.
I was really into paintball back in high school as well, and I took one of my paintball guns to school to give like a talk about it in a speech class, and they were fine with that.
The temptation to misuse one of those must have been great. Dan, in a school setting, you know. You get that one kid that, you know, shakes you down for your lunch money. Ha, brat.
I've had some experience with paintball. I never really got into it, but I played it a bunch of times, and it hurts. So
it's fun. It does hurt. Yeah.
I have never played paintball.
Wow.
I would when love I, to.
I lived in Montana for about a year and a half, and when I was living there, the paintball scene was pretty big, and it was big enough that my little team and I managed to go semi-pro on kind of a regional level with it.
Wow. I didn't even know that was a thing, semi-pro paintball.
Yeah. I didn't either.
It's a thing. Even pro paintball is a thing on a international level. There's teams from France and Russia and Germany and the UK that all get together for these massive tournaments around the world.
So how does that work? How does a paintball, how do you score and how do you, I mean, other than, oh, look, I've got paint on me. I mean, I'm
not sure what the scoring's like these days, but when I was playing, the fields were set up in kind of a arena, and you had what were called bunkers, where they were basically just like big inflatable shapes kind of made out of similar stuff to like what a whitewater raft would be made out of. And each side of the field was the same. So the field was symmetrical and the teams would start out on opposite ends and basically kind of go toward each other. You have different positions. Like you have a front player that's more aggressive up in front, kind of relaying things back to his mid and back players. Mid's kind of just a support player to fill in wherever. Back players kind of lay down the heavy covering sort of fire for the front and mid players. And usually it was till the opposing team was all eliminated by getting hit once. Or if you could get a hold of the opposing team's flag and get it back to where you started, you would win then there as well.
Sounds like Ender's Game.
Yeah, kind of.
Neat. That sounds like fun, actually.
It does.
And with the pro level stuff, everyone's wearing like football cleats and jerseys and pants. A lot of people thought the jerseys and pants looked like motocross stuff because it's all bright colors and baggy and has some padding built into it and stuff.
Did you get sponsors and things like?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah, I had no idea. Interesting. I don't know. Paintball seems to have like declined a little bit. I don't know. It's not as big a deal as it used to be.
It's pretty well died out.
Yeah.
In certain areas, it's still going on, like in California and areas out east and stuff. But
there's a place near where I live that says they do the little BB things,
airsoft,
right? Yeah.
I wonder if that contributed to paintball not being as popular, just because the airsoft is more realistic, if you will,
and airsoft's more affordable,
right?
Yeah,
and less messy.
Yeah, because with paintball, it wasn't uncommon for my whole team to shoot a case, which was 2,000 paintballs in one match.
Right.
And without having sponsors, a case of paintballs was anywhere from about $40 to $70.
Wow.
Right. Whereas you can get a canister of like 5,000 airsoft pellets for what, $20?
Or less, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my son had some airsoft guns when he was younger. You still got them there somewhere, but I just remember being like floored that they were really inexpensive.
Yeah.
Man, you look at the breadth of topics we've covered tonight.
I know. It's been crazy. I can't even keep up. I usually try to list topics on the webpage, and I just give up.
It's just everything.
I'm just going to, on this one, I'm just going to go and stuff. I don't know. Yeah.
It's nothing wrong with that, and hopefully people find it interesting.
Oh yeah,
we talked about a lot of stuff. It was cool.
You know, Rob's been great, and
my gosh, we're at the end of the hour.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, Okay.
Cool. And I just wanted to say, you know, we've been like Rob said, we've been kind of been badgering people to, we've been, I don't know if badgering is the right word, but anyway, we've been, we've been encouraging people to come on the show, and you know, if Rob can do it, anybody can do it. So, you know,
sure.
It's not that
and Rob,
painful.
You were, yeah, Rob was great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And, yeah. And you know,
I just always feel like everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody has stuff to talk about that we have not heard. And it's interesting, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Lord knows I get sick of listening to Jay and Alan all the time, but.
I like how she lists me first.
I'm just actually, Jay, you've been talking a lot more on the show and I really appreciate it and I enjoy it. So it's,
well,
nice.
I have to make up because, you know, Hayden and his friends won't know, you know, they'll think the output's been decreased.
Oh, why is that one guy not talking as much?
So, we have not next week, but the week after, we have another guest listener lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we have lots of space. If you want to, join us
yeah,
and talk, we'd love to have you. It, you know, and it's not a one-time thing, Rob. You can, you know, we'd like to have you on more often too, you know, so not, you know, not next week maybe, but you know,
anytime. as long as I'm not running into scheduling issues with recording the podcast I'm getting up and running or
what
doing
you,
some work for
what are you
do you want to promote your podcast?
Yeah.
Sure. The podcast I do a lot of behind-the-scenes work on is called Photog Adventures. The hosts of that are my buddy Aaron and Brendan. They're in mm-hmm. Utah. They mostly specialize in astrophotography as well, and oh, cool. They talk a lot about their various adventures and travels because they travel around a lot. And the one I'm getting up and running isn't quite out yet. It will be called Wild Photog Adventures, and it will be myself, my buddy Jeff, and my buddy Dan, and we will be more wildlife-oriented.
Oh, cool.
I would love to have you back and talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, me too.
You know, going out into the field and finding animals to take photos of and your experiences there. That would be really interesting.
So, sure.
Yeah, next time you're on, we'll talk about that.
It'd be kind of interesting being 50 feet away from a grizzly bear.
Yes.
See,
very interesting.
Now that is interesting.
Yeah.
You should have led with that, Rob. Jeez. Now we're out of time.
Ah, but now we want him to come back.
That's
his,
right.
His cunning plan worked.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's a teaser, y'all. Next time Rob's on, we're talking grizzlies.
Cool. All right. I'm going to go paint my kitchen floor.
All right.
That has been my project today. We've been painting my kitchen floor.
Nice.
And, I'm on coat two now, and I want to get the second coat on before I go to bed. But people, you can paint linoleum. If you have crappy old linoleum, and if you wash it real good and strip it real good and then prime it, you can paint it with porch paint, and it looks awesome.
All right. And Brita
knows
how to paint.
Tip from the Brita. Yeah. So I'm going to go do that, and everybody have a great week.
Yep. We'll be back next week, everybody, and y'all okay. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
See ya. Awesome.
Bye. Bye.